After the United Kingdom served their Article 50 notice, later in the year, the Department of Justice approached the professions and asked them about the opportunities and the response that needed to be dealt with. And throughout the period of 2017, the Bar and the Law Society worked with the IDA and a number of the other government departments in order to formulate an approach which could be made to dealing with challenges and opportunities that come from Brexit. And that ultimately culminated in a proposal which was made in May of 2018. It's a joint proposal made by the professions, by a number of what you might call specialist associations, including the Commercial Litigation Association and Arbitration Ireland, and by 16 of Ireland's largest corporate firms. And that proposal is entitled Promoting Ireland as a Leading Centre Globally for International Legal Services. Now, Ken Murphy, the Director General of the Law Society, will talk to you later on about the practical impact of what's happening with lawyers coming to Ireland, and he has all the up-to-date figures and information to you in relation to that. I'm going to talk to you more about the theoretical side of it. So what was the idea which we had? Well, the intention of this proposal is, first of all, to assist government in responding on a national level to the challenges promoted by are given by Brexit in the context of legal services. And as part of that, what we want to do is help the government develop a strategy which makes Ireland an efficient and business-friendly place in the context of legal services. And it goes without saying that for an effective financial services sector, for an effective corporate sector, and an effective industrial sector, it is very important that the legal system works very well. And we see that as forming part of what you might call the ecosystem. So just as it's very important, for instance, to have an effective accountancy sector in a business world, it's just as important to have an effective legal services sector, an effective and efficient legal services sector. And I hope I'm going to be able to push down here. So, I think I've got the wrong document open on the thing. I just let the gentleman get this. So just talk to you about what was the idea. Well, the idea.
Just press it down, set it left or right.
So the idea we had was that we know that international companies in doing business prefer the common law system. In particular, financial services companies prefer the common law system. And Judge Hogan spoke about concepts such as being fact-based. Party autonomy is a very important concept for financial services. The idea that the parties to a contract can choose how that contract is going to play out. And there is, I suppose, some irony to the reference of legal certainty in Judge Hogan's discussion with you, because in fact, one of the virtues for international business about the common law system is that they see the common law system as being very much a more certain place to go and have your disputes, that you know easier in the common law system what the result is going to be compared to the common law system. And certainly, I think, without expressing any views on the merits of the various codes Judge Hogan spoke about, some of the concepts, I think, which he talked about, such as the obligation to negotiate where contractual obligations become onerous. I think most financial services firms would find that a frightening concept to be introduced into their law. Post-Brexit, we are going to be the only English-speaking common law system fully integrated in the European legal order. Just speak a little bit about Malta and Cyprus. Malta and Cyprus are said sometimes to be common law systems. They are, I think, more mixed systems. There are systems which certainly on the public law side are very much civil law systems, and then on the civil law side have common law aspects, but they're not a pure common law system in the way that we are. We will of course remain integrated in the legal order. So we believe that the fact that we remain as the only common law system, an English speaking system, and with a developed legal sector, gives an opportunity to develop the market in legal services. It's an opportunity to increase employment in the legal sector. It's an opportunity thereby to increase tax revenue for the state. And it's also an opportunity, if we support the sector, to develop a much more perfect ecosystem for companies and businesses to do their work here. Some of this work inevitably comes from London, but I think it's important not to frame this project as being an attempt to take work out of London. Some international legal services work is going to leave London as a consequence of Brexit. I'll just give you some examples of that. Clifford Chance gave evidence to the House of Commons about 2 weeks ago, and they indicated that some of the European institutions, such as the European Investment Bank, are no longer willing to use English law in their contracts, in their lending contracts. So there are some types of significant project finance which would, before now, always have been dealt with in English law, and it's simply not going to be dealt with in English law going forward. Similarly, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association have now published both Irish law and French law master agreements to govern what are derivatives contracts in Europe. Now, before now, derivatives contracts, I think well over 95% of the world, would have been governed by both English and New York law. And again, going forward, that's just not going to happen. So this isn't about trying to take cake from other people. It's about recognizing that there is some work which will leave the English law framework, and about identifying Ireland as being ideally positioned to offer that service, the legal service, and to take some of that work into us. And we see a dual approach as being the approach to deal with this. First of all, we need to communicate outwardly the advantages which we have, and the existing advantages in the Irish legal system. And secondly, we need to have support for the legal system to make sure that the legal system can respond properly to the challenges that face it, and to the work that's coming before it. So in terms of communicating outwardly our existing approach, there are existing advantages of Irish law. We have an independent and impartial judiciary. And I'm not trying to point at any other countries and saying they don't have that. I certainly wouldn't want to do that in the context of Europe. But I don't think we should underestimate the value of that to international business. And I say that, I'm speaking at a forum on Friday, and one of the other people at the forum is the corporate counsel of one of the largest companies in the world. And I said to them, does that really matter? We were talking beforehand. And they said, there are lots of countries around the world where you don't have an independent and impartial judiciary. So it is something of value, and it's something that we should respect and be proud of. Secondly, and I think there's very few solicitors in the room, so I can't be accused of trying to aspire to say tight for work when I say this, I don't think we sufficiently recognise the huge breadth and depth of knowledge, particularly in the large solicitors firms in this country. And I was called to the bar in 1997, and even in the period from 1997 to now, Certainly the top 10 or 15 firms in Ireland have developed into really very impressive organisations. And I don't think that in most European cities of our size, or even most capital cities across Europe, you would get the number of large corporate firms providing the breadth of corporate experience that you get in Ireland. And in one way, it wouldn't be possible to really go out there and sell the services of Irish lawyers and Irish law without the work that's been done in the solicitors' firms over the last 20 years. And I'm sure Ken Murphy would agree with what I'm saying, but I think it's important to recognise that. The Irish Bar has got wide experience across a number of different sectors, and in particular in relation to commercial law, in relation to European law, and over the last 10 years or so, has developed a lot of expertise in terms of cross-border and international litigation. And there's been a number of really enormous international cases which have taken place over the number of years, demonstrating the experience of the bar. So these things taken together, and just the final one I want to mention is the existing commercial court. The opportunity which we have identified is one which is recognised across Europe. The opportunity to try and promote a legal sector in the context of Brexit. The French, the Dutch, the Belgians, and the Germans are all promoting their legal systems actively and are setting up courts, interestingly, English-speaking courts in order to take advantage of extra work that might be available in the context of Brexit. But why would you go to those new courts? Because we have an existing commercial list, which is, I think, probably about 20 years in existence at this stage, and has developed a lot of expertise, and has developed a lot of respect around the world in terms of its speed and efficiency of doing business. So in our proposal, and that's what I'm going to say about the proposal, we put 16 key proposals forward. Many of them have nothing to do with law reform. I just want to turn a little bit to law reform, because there's two issues in our proposal which are of relevance to law reform. And the first is, we must recognize the challenges that are posed for Ireland in the context of law reform because of Brexit. And the first one, and Judge Hogan touched on this, is, and Judge Boy as well, we will no longer have the support of the UK in the formulation of legislative proposals at EU level. And that's just not in terms of common sales law, it's across the board. So we are no longer going to have, and I think Judge Foy referred to this, we can't benefit from the UK approach to the transposition of EU legislation into domestic law. And thirdly, we may need to intervene in a greater number of cases before the ECJ. And we shouldn't really underestimate the amount of cases that the United Kingdom intervenes at European Union level, and where we perhaps have decided, well, we don't need to intervene there because they will speak up for our interests. We will no longer have the benefit of you know, the obviously very impressive cadre of lawyers in the United Kingdom who decide how they will transpose European legislation into Irish law. We will no longer be able to look at that and see whether we think the way they're doing it is good. And to return to the first one, when proposals such as this common sales law come before the Commission in the future, we won't have their support going forward. In addition, we need to remember that at European level, London is at the moment the second largest centre of European law experience after Brussels. And over time, we believe inevitably that will change. And that does mean that at our university level, we need to increase our emphasis on the teaching of European Union law. Not just in law, but also in business-related disciplines. Now, Frederica points out to me, and I suppose I'd overlooked it, that there's actually a business opportunity here for the third level sector, because as they stop teaching EU law in the United Kingdom, there is obviously a corresponding business opportunity for the third level sector here. But we do need to focus on, because of the need, certainly in business and at government level, to have experience of EU law, we need to make sure that our universities are teaching that as much as they can. There will, as a consequence of what I've mentioned, be an importance to the government of employing EU lawyers and people who have EU law expertise. And going forward, it's important that the civil service in general has proper expertise in EU law. And of course, coming back to the professions, it's important that the professions continue their commitment to EU law specialisms. I just mentioned there's three organisations there which are committed to that, the Irish Centre of European Law, the Irish Society of European Law, and the recently formed EU Bar Association, which is a special association of the Bar. And together, the Law Society and the Bar Council are going to need to ensure to foster those organisations and make sure that as a profession we continue our commitment to EU law. So are there opportunities in the context of law reform because of Brexit and they're leaving the European Union? Well, we think there are opportunities. There is the possibility at any time, and this is something that the law reform will have a mandate to do, to modernise or clarify legislation and regulation to remove obstacles to business. That's particularly relevant to the financial services sector. Over time, I think we must acknowledge there's going to be divergence from London in certain areas, and divergence from the English legal system and their regulatory system. And what we need to look at law reform as being an opportunity. It's an opportunity to make sure that as there is divergence, that our system becomes more business friendly and contributes to being a more efficient economy. I think certainly when government hear me speaking, and I'm afraid I've spoken on many occasions about this topic, they're worried that I'm asking for money in lots of areas, and of course, one always wants more money committed to a legal sector. But I just want to point out in this context, in the context of law reform itself very often doesn't have an exchequer cost. If you change the law to make the law more friendly to business, in most cases there's no call on the central fund to contribute to that. The call on the central fund, insofar as it exists, is in the context of properly resourcing a body such as the Law Reform Commission. So when you look at how you're going to benefit from this, if you accept that changing your laws to make them more business friendly doesn't cost anything in itself, it's, we suggest, a relatively modest cost to support bodies such as the Law Reform Commission. And you have to have a willingness to change primary and secondary legislation where required. But most importantly, you need a process to ensure that over the years to come, that there can be efficient and timely assessment of our laws and any need for improvement. I suppose the Law Reform Commission won't reject any call for extra funding for their business. But certainly, what I wanted to emphasize to you is that a body such as the Law Reform Commission can be a very important part of adapting to Brexit, adapting our laws to make sure they're more efficient, and be part of our mission going forward. So we think that there are, of course, challenges in the context of Brexit in the legal services sector. There are challenges in the context of law reform, particularly in terms of what's going to happen at Europe. There is an opportunity which now exists for the country to develop the legal services sector in order to respond to Brexit. And we think we need to embrace that opportunity which now exists. We certainly have received political support from the government for our proposal. We understand that it is actively being considered, and hopefully they will have good news for all of us and for the sector in terms of dealing with Brexit over the next couple of weeks. So thank you very much.